Welcome to Property Uncover Show. This is Sanjeev Shah, your host. At Property Uncover Show, I have the privilege to interview real Australian investors who share their wisdom by uncovering their property journey, mindset, who they are, when and what made them inspired, what are they doing differently, which helps them act and make a difference to their own and loved one's life. Let's get into this episode so we all can learn from our guests' success and most importantly, their mistakes, so we avoid repeating them. Hi everyone, Sanjeev here. Today I've got a very special guest who is a very well-known person in Perth property market. He started his career as a consultant with PwC and then eventually moved into the property investment path. And he's not only a successful investor with double-digit properties, he's also a developer, run his own end-to-end property solution business. He's also the host of the Perth Property Show podcast. He's someone very frequently seen on Channel 9 sharing his property insights and market update. And today I have the privilege to interview him to share about his own journey so we all can learn from him and take some actions in our own journey. So let's get into this episode. Welcome, Trent.
Hi, Sanjeev. How are you going?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, fantastic, man. It's a beautiful, blue, sunny day in Perth and fantastic time of year, obviously, being Christmas. We've got a Christmas party with the staff this evening, so looking forward to it.
Awesome. So I know you recently got married as well. So congratulations.
Yeah, my wife is from Switzerland and we were lucky enough to be able to share our nuptials with about 85 of our friends and family in the Swiss Alps, where she spent a lot of her time in her life before moving to Australia. And we're able to share that with our friends and family from Perth.
Awesome. So now I know you're 32 years and you're doing some amazing things, decent property portfolio. So I thought it'd be good to share like how you all started, when you were working, you know, with PwC, how did you get into the property side of the world? So do you want to give a bit of a background and then start your journey, buddy?
Yeah, my life professionally started just out of high school. I was given an opportunity to work at PricewaterhouseCoopers as a consultant back when I was 18. I stayed there for 4 years, realized it probably wasn't for me. I wasn't very fulfilled by that work, but at the time wasn't really sure what did fulfill me. So did like any sane young kid at the time and just tried to get a pay rise, really. Thought that might make me happier. Moved into being a commercial analyst in the gold industry for a large gold mining company in Western Australia. That was pretty good. Learned some more skills around commercial analysis and strategy and financial analysis. But again, wasn't very fulfilling, wasn't working towards a goal that really interested me or fulfilled me, and still hadn't learned the lesson yet. So went and found another job, mainly just looking for a pay rise in an industry that, or in a position that maybe was deemed more respected, more high profile, I guess, working as a strategic advisor for a large oil and gas company in Western Australia, and was there for another couple of years. So this is year 7 and 8 in my career out of school, after obviously doing my university at the same time as well. And again, just wasn't fulfilled. And by that point in time, I was really questioning what this can't be my life. You know, this can't be it. I'm really not seeing myself in 20 years continually doing this and being happy. So I have to make a real structural shift in my life to be fulfilled and happy. Throughout all that time, I had been on the side. I don't know why. I don't know where it came from. I guess needed the challenge and I enjoyed the challenge. I'd been developing property, you know, a quick 2-lot subdivision or a triplex, these sort of things since I was 19.
So tell me, like, you started questioning and asking, I think I know what age we're talking about, like how many year old you were at that point in time when working and you started questioning.
Yeah, I probably was questioning it the whole time since I was 19. After that first year, you know, I wasn't really fulfilled and I was looking for that opportunity to find fulfillment. I think when you're young, you get taught that it's really just when you have a higher income, you'll be happier. And that's not correct at all. I think once you get past the median income in Perth, it's about 90 grand or something like that. I think once you get past that, you've got most of the things, you've got enough money to live pretty comfortably as a normal person in Western Australia. And if you're brought up fairly modestly, the quicker you can learn that money isn't the thing that makes you fulfilled and happy, the quicker you can start focusing on what it is that actually does make you fulfilled and happy. And And it took me, you know, 3 jobs and 8 years of continually testing that, whether it was the financial side, whether it was the prestige of the job I was in at the time, the complexity of the job, none of those things were making me happy. So by the time I got to 25, I genuinely thought, this is not for me. And I was looking into becoming a wildlife filmmaker or a safari guide in South Africa. I thought, this is it. I'm going to live a vocational life where the financial side isn't relevant to me, and I can save animals or I can watch animals all day, because I always loved that. So from there, I quit my job, quit my career, took off, didn't know that I left Australia, didn't think I was ever going to come back for a very long time. And I spent the next year and a half, I'd traveled to 50 something countries by then, and essentially doing an audit of the world to find who is happy and where they're happy and what they're doing to make themselves happy and fulfilled. And
what was your trigger point, Ren? Because when I was in my, 30, 31, I started questioning what is for me in my life, right? But like, you are like at 18, 19, earning well, doing things. Like, what was your trigger point, like where you started questioning?
I got to a point in my career where I thought, or I realized, it can't really get much better than this on paper. I've got a fantastic income, fantastic benefits. I'm in a business that's well-respected, doing a job that is well-respected. It can't really get better than this for me in Perth. So, and other than just being in the job longer and getting promoted over time into management positions based on my experience and age, I realized that there was no more excuses left for me anymore here. It wasn't like, oh, if I just get that job or if I just get into that pay bracket. Well, I got those things and I still wasn't fulfilled. So clearly I needed to make a fundamental shift in my life at the time. And this isn't for everyone. I used to envy, and I did until I became fulfilled with what I do now. I envied those people who were in a career and they knew from a young age, and they were in a career that they absolutely loved, regardless of what that career was, regardless of the income they made. They were just so fulfilled. The 40, 50, 60 hours a week they spent doing that work, they were happy and they loved it. And all they could think about was getting back to it. Because let's face it, whether we love it or we don't love it, to put food on the table, we need to work in a job with people that we may or may not like for 40 to 50 hours a week. So you'd better bloody hope that you love it. Because if you don't, it's a pretty mediocre space to be in life, in my opinion. So I just wasn't happy. I wasn't comfortable with that. So I went traveling, tested out the idea of being a filmmaker, went and got my qualification as a safari guide. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. But I was still drawn to the idea that I wanted to do more with my life rather than live a vocational life of conservancy. I really wanted to make an impact in my community that, people would respect, and where I could really help people and get with my skills. And my skills were always in financial analysis, strategy, negotiation. My skills weren't really in animal conservation. That's sort of where a lot of my interests lied at the time, but they weren't my skills. I needed to find something that under my skills with what I was passionate about. And one thing that I was just never honest with myself about was that I love property. I'd been doing it since I was 19. No one made me do it. No one forced me into it. I've been doing it as a hobby outside of work since I was 19. And I just didn't want to be when I was younger, I didn't know any pathways in property that weren't a slimy real estate agent. And I thought, well, I don't want to be that, so I can't be in property. I didn't know that you could be a property developer as a career unless you were already a billionaire. I didn't know that there were jobs like being in valuation or being in development management, project management, and these sort of things. I just wasn't aware of them. So did my research, and I guess the sliding doors moment in my life, the part where really I can define that moment. A friend of mine, when I was in South Africa doing my studies for being a safari guide, and I was talking about this issue with her, and she said, look, watch this TED talk. And I don't really like watching TED talks. I think a lot of them are fluffy. And it was 5 ways to know your path in life, really wanky. And I don't remember the other 4 things, but the 3rd thing was, what's the one thing that you're good at that people around you know you for, that you can help them in their life? You can make their life better doing the thing that you're good at. Make a business out of that. Even if there isn't an example that you know of that does that work. So I thought, all right, I've got nothing to lose. At that point in time, I was unemployed. I was in South Africa looking at the reality of being a safari guide, which was okay, but again, I had something scratching the back of my head. And it got to that point where, okay, I'm going to do it. So whilst I was over there doing that degree, I also got my real estate qualifications, my mortgage working qualifications, and came home. And the first thing I did was start refinancing my friends' mortgages and helping friends of friends buy cheap small properties in Western Australia and cutting them up and making $100,000 for them in a year. And that's where Strategic Property Group started. And, you know, now we're probably the most impactful business in that small scale subdivision space in Western Australia. And we've progressed on from there to being a multi-service investment consultancy that has a dozen syndicated medium $5 to $20 million developments under our belt that are doing things that 5 years ago I never would have dreamed of.
That's why I've heard like a lot of time, you know, the quality of our life is dependent on the quality of the question we ask. And I think you're a true example. Like early age, 19, 20, you started asking question, hey, even though you had such a good high paid job, right? Good career, everything. But then you said, no, I think it can't be so good, right? And then that one TED talk actually triggered you that, hey, you know, pick something one out of yourself, which you can go and convert into a business to help other people. And literally that time you didn't have a job because of course you had quit your job before going for that safari and came back and literally started with a small. So did you take your mortgage broker and all those licenses is required for refinancing and all the stuff?
Yeah, I actually did all the qualification, all the studies for that whilst I was away. I was in a privileged position there where I'd saved enough money to be away for as long as I needed to be to figure out what I wanted to do. And that's where a lot of people get caught is they might not be in that position. They might not have had the savings or planned for that. You know, before I left, I'd planned for it for at least 12 months financially and psychologically to actually be in that headspace to have nothing stopping me, nothing holding me back, no opportunity cost to eventually being when I was in a position where I figured out what I wanted to do. But I'd actually go and do it properly. And that was the key point. It was simply that, yes, I was in a good career that I could be proud of at the time, but I was not fulfilled by it. Not many 15-year-old boys think about their future and go, you know what, I want to help a multinational organization extract gas from the Arafura Sea north of Darwin. That's not something that most people are fulfilled by now, or at least most people dream of doing. And a lot of people end up obviously in organizations like oil and gas and mining, and if they can be fulfilled by their particular role in engineering or geophysics or project management, accounting, all those roles that are there, then they're very lucky. But I just wasn't fulfilled by that.
And that's what happens. Majority of the workforce population is not fulfilled with what they do. Now tell me, Trent, like at your age, that time someone say, hey, okay, now I've got the idea that I love property, I can go and help people. But that time, didn't you feel like, hey, you know, how I'm going to find my first client or first someone to help or no, help them deal? So what was going that point in time in your mindset, like where you had fear, like, hey, I'm going to find my clients because now this is, you're going to be your full-time business or job. So
I guess one of the defining factors, I think, in success, especially in small business, when you're starting out, is people who have a fear of missing out more than a fear of failure are more likely to succeed. If your fear of failure overpowers you, you'll probably not try things. You'll probably not push yourself. You'll probably not bother. You'll be just too scared that there's possibility you fail. But if you're so irritated by missing out on the opportunities you might have in your life if you actually have a crack, then it overcomes that fear of failure. And 9 times out of 10, if the action you take is relatively sound in terms of logic, you'll probably get at least your time back or your money back or experience back that you can then push into the next, you know, you can roll that into the next effort, the next action. So yeah, you said, well, were you not scared of that first, you're not going to get that first client? And the reality is I stuck to what I was good at, that people knew me for, that I could help them with. And even though I didn't have a business doing what I was doing before I started my business, people knew me for that. There were clearly a number of people around who the second I started offering those services, they were like, yeah, I'll have that help, thanks. So it wasn't I just went and started a beauty parlor the next week and thought, oh, I want to cut hair. And people say, why are you doing that? People had known me that for those skills, for those achievements, long before I started a business servicing people to do the same thing.
Yeah, true. I think, and at the same time, as you said, right, like you were confident enough that, hey, what I'm going to do, I really mean it. I'm going to be successful in that. Of course, we all have doubt and fear, but like you're enough confident, and that's what other people also see, right?
When you're passionate about something, you become a student of it. And when you're, and I always say students are teachers are the best students as well. So if you're always assisting people with it, you have to be very acute with it because you need to be correct And when you love something, you're always, it's not work for you to be up at 3 a.m. researching opportunities, researching information, researching the way things are done. So before I even started that business, the first services I provided, as I discussed, I was already an expert in them because I'd been doing it for myself for years before. It wasn't like I was like, hey man, there's this idea called subdivision and property development. You know, do you want me to help you? And you can pay me. It was a case of, man, I've done this many times before. They've come to me saying, hey, Trent, I heard you're offering this as a service as a business now. I can see the case studies of where you've made some significant capital doing it for yourself. Even if there were only two or three clients at the time I was working with, they weren't bothered by that because they'd already seen my personal success individually.
So you were already doing it, like, and this was all coming with your family, or how you were doing, like, before you getting into, you know, full venture?
As I said, I started work when I was 18. So I'd built up, you know, and to be honest, the finance situation back in 2008, 2009, it was a lot easier to get loans and those sort of things back then. So, you know, the first project made 100 and something grand, and I rolled that into the second one, which made 100 and something grand, and the third one made 200 or 300 grand. And from there, obviously, you don't need to rely on family or whatever it is. I was lucky enough to have a job when I was 18 that paid enough to get a loan, and it just snowballed from there.
And how did you learn all those initial days, Trent?
Well, I think in the first ones, I was sort of flying blind a little bit. I was lucky in the timing that probably anything you invested in Perth in 2009, you were going to make money on. I remember I was doing I did this house behind a house development in Balga, which is a lower price suburb in Perth, but had some serious value gains in that time. And I remember doing the subdivision, bought the property for 350, subdivided it, made 150 grand out of it, just doing a subdivision. And what I realized was that all I did was sell the piece of land at the back rather than build at the back at the time. And if I had held that property for about 9 months later, I would have made another 70 grand. And that was simply just timing in the market. That was just passive income. And, you know, I haven't sold many things since then, having recognized that in the first place. But when you've got the market on your side, you can probably afford a little bit to make your own mistakes. And that's where you learn, right? If you're making your own mistakes along the way for yourself, and then 6-7 years later, you can start a business with that, not making those mistakes, having learned from those mistakes and built a system that works for you in your community for other people. So, but these days, over time, you build a network of experienced people. And the best advice I've gotten and the best advice I can give to anyone else is, if you want to, you know, mitigate any risk of loss in your efforts in property investment or development, hire the best people in your city. Whatever they cost, whether they're $1,000 or $2,000 more than the last person you asked, the value provided in the risk mitigation and the opportunity maximization of the best people you know is far more valuable. And that's what we stick to these days. We have the best people in Perth that we pay as our consultants doing our work for us.
Totally agree with that. On the way, you're doing mistakes. And then, you know, if you want to take it as a business level, then you use all those learning. I mean, pretty much that's what happened with my own personal journey, where I was investing, learning, and now I've got this property buy agent business because of all those mistakes I've done over the years, and you know, the good and bad of it, right? So now I think I totally agree with you. Now, a lot of people are listening to it and they're saying, you know, looks like I'm another young guy like Trent, as if Trent is talking my heart. Now, like, if you have to summarize and say in 3 key bullet points, then what are the key 3 things you would say someone, you know, looking forward, listening to this one, that, hey, do these 3 things if you're getting into the property journey? So what would be that from your side, Trent?
Learn. That's all you can do, right? Is listen to the Perth Property Show. It has 211 episodes. Sanjeev's been on it. It has the best experts in my network that are managing directors, some of the biggest developers, some of the biggest people in planning, law, tax, valuations, suburb spotlights, real estate agents, as I said, interior design, landscaping. Learn from the best people. So you listen to podcasts. They are the best way to quickly form an understanding of what your parameters are, of risks and opportunities, and help you align with where you want to take your investment strategy. So that would be the first thing, is learn. The second thing, segueing into that, pick a niche. Get very good at something. Try not to be something to everything. So if you really like passive investment and picking up properties that lower the market value, and you like the rental yield that comes from passive investment, stick to that and be good at that. If you like the risk profile of property development, find a niche within there and get very good at that and just keep exploiting that. So yeah, become an expert in a small space in property, whether it's location-based or strategy-based, and you will mitigate your risk. Thirdly, surround yourself with experienced, smart people in the industry, because most people aren't actually in the world, but also in property, aren't much smarter than you. They're just more experienced, and their success is based on the risk mitigation from that experience. So the quicker you can learn from them and learn from other people's mistakes rather than your own mistakes, the more likely that you won't have a two steps forward, one step back situation. You just keep snowballing on the two steps forward.
Now, I think that's definitely awesome advice. And now you're doing a lot of property deals, property investment, plus you're running a business also, right? So how do you compare both if you have to?
Well, the cool thing about my job is I just get to do a whole bunch of property development all year. Now, again, I said to you at the start, it's not making money for yourself that makes me happy, at least. I don't think it makes many people happy. It's simply doing something you love. And the financial reward from that is an outcome that essentially indicates how well you did. But if the process of doing that thing is what makes you happy. So people said to me early on, they said, Trent, why don't you just do two or three developments a year by yourself? Why would you do 30 or 40 developments for other people and all that effort? And I said, because now I get to do 30 or 40 developments a year. That's pretty cool. And more importantly than that, and obviously what comes to that is the continual learning and the continual opportunities that come from the network of doing all that. But I actually get to help people. It's something that's extremely satisfying and fulfilling. Unlike the oil and gas industry or the gold industry, there are real people where they'll come in with a certain amount of money and we make them a certain amount more in a certain time. And you can see how that changes people's lives. And having come from very humble beginnings in my own family growing up, it makes me very happy, very fulfilled to be able to see us making real change in people's lives through the very narrow spectrum of skills that we have that we're just very good at that can provide that outcome. Some people save lives. Some people keep people out of jail. Some people keep people's teeth clean. We help people make a lot of money in the very narrow strategies that we have.
Property is one of the best way to make a lot of money. And yeah, I think especially if you do it well on, then I think the fruits are too good to be true, I think.
Well, it gives people options, right? As I said, it doesn't make you happy. But if you're working a day job and you're making 200 grand a year, and there's someone on the background that can help you, double that every couple of years, that really does help people with regards to their options, with regards to the holidays they can have and the nest egg they can have, put their kids through good schools and all that sort of stuff. So people decide what they want to do with that money, but that's having, again, grown up in very humble beginnings, that taking that pressure away has from a lot of our clients and helping them supercharge all the work that they do on a daily basis in their own career, that's where we can make a difference.
Creates a lot of choices so that you can do whatever you want, right? And like your true example, right? Asking the question always, hey, what is next for me, right? And now suddenly you have all the time, money is there, plus, what you're doing is fulfilling. So I think, awesome. I think I'm going to ask your favorite, generally, you're asked this question all the time in Channel 9. So what's your prediction for the Perth market for 2023 and what's happening in the market at the moment?
So look, Perth is my space of expertise. I can't answer anything about the rest of the country with a lot of expertise, but I can tell you about Perth. Perth has half the amount of properties on the market consistently every week for the last year than it did have 3 years ago. So we have 8,000 properties on the market on average. 3-4 years ago, that was 17,000. So we have half the amount of supply. We have about 900 to 1,000 properties transacting every week. Now, 3 years ago, that was 500. So we have double the amount of demand. So we have half the amount of supply and double the amount of demand. Our rental vacancy 4 years ago was 7.5%. It's now 0.5%. So there's no alternative market to the sales market. And obviously, rental prices are now peaking through new records. And most importantly, and this is where we diverge from the East Coast market, which is obviously suffering and will continue to do so, from my opinion, for a while now, for this reason. This reason is affordability. Sydney people spend 50 to 60% of their disposable income on a median mortgage. People in Sydney make the same amount of money as us. Our mortgage is less than half of that of those in people of Sydney because the price of our property is less than half. And therefore, we spend less than 30% of our disposable income on our mortgage. Statistics have shown many times in the past that a market, regardless of demand and supply, is crippled the second it gets into the mid-50s, up to 60% of your disposable income being spent on your mortgage. And that's why before even interest rates started rising, the Sydney market started to fall in a heap. The Perth market, and that's exactly why the Perth market has been resilient throughout this time, is because whilst interest rate rises make property less affordable around the country, it is nowhere near unaffordable to West Australians and Australians in general at these interest rates. So what it does is it allows the fundamentals of demand and supply to continue to prevail, and that is where it will continue to be. We have less than half of the amount of land sales than we did in the worst time before COVID in Western Australia right now. So supply isn't going to improve anytime soon. And our demand continues to sustain at levels above our mining boom. So when you hear those fundamentals objectively, you'd be a bit silly to expect anything other than growth. The only caveat is, obviously, at any point in time, property becomes unaffordable by the simple factor of interest rate rises. So our numbers show that if our cash rate got to about 4.5%, we would be in a similar position to where Sydney is. Anything between 3.1, which is where it is now, and 4.5, we have a market that the demand and supply fundamentals are the prevailing powers of growth. So that is where it's at. Next year, I expect moderate growth and not blanket growth. It will be growth in affordable areas where East Coast investors see a lot of rental yield strength and where the properties are still under replacement value. Because again, we are 10% of a national market. When the whole national market is looking at Perth, which it is right now, it's very easy for the national market of investors to make big impacts in certain areas in Perth based on their perception of value, which is not incorrect. Also, well constructed family homes in upper class areas will continue to have growth simply based because there's an undersupply there and people can pay the numbers. Imagine a suburb in Sydney that sells for $4 million for a family home. I don't know what that suburb would be. You could imagine it right now, and your listeners will too. Imagine that property is less than $2 million in Perth, and we make more money than you on average. Then that's where you get that confidence. If you come from your background where you've seen growth, and then you think about the $4 million house in Sydney, and suddenly it's worth less than two, you're sitting there going, how can I buy three of them, right? That's where Perth is right now.
And your Perth houses are even better than that $4 million, what you're going to get in $2 million, actually.
That's right. They're constructed stronger. They're made of double brick. They're probably a lot newer. So yeah, that's true.
Thank you so much, Chartrain. Now, one last final words for the people who are looking to invest in the current market or getting scared of the rate of interest or anything. What do you have to say for them?
You might not like me saying this, Sanjay, but I would say that if you are in an East Coast market, you should be worried. It's still unaffordable. It's very unaffordable. It was unaffordable before interest rates started rising, and now it's cripplingly unaffordable for a lot of people, which is why the market is looking at Perth. But however, like all things, people reset their expectations, just like fuel prices. We used to think that $1.20 per litre was crazy, and now we're all scurrying around trying to find $1.50. Like, it's cheap, right? So things reset. People will earn more over time as inflation kicks in. And I expect interest rates will settle at some point in the mid-year. They may even come back. They usually have over history. The RBA usually overshoots. So reset your budgets. And if you are looking to invest in property, Perth is the place to do it.
Totally agree. That's why we're not buying in Sydney. You know where we're buying. So definitely in Perth. So thank you so much for your time today, Trent. It was awesome having you. I'm sure the listeners who are listening, they're going to take a couple of things, two or three things from this episode and going to implement in their life and get some success. So once again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. Hope you enjoyed and learned something new from this episode. Please don't forget to review our podcast and tune in every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Sydney time, to listen to all our inspirational guests and learn from their property journey. In case you're looking for help with your property investment journey or building a property portfolio, please visit our website www.investorsdream.com.au to learn more about us and our services. And feel free to book a call from our website for a friendly chat. Have an awesome life and happy property investing.